It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today is Jesse Tapia.
Yeah, we're working through technical difficulties on the stream right now. We're going to try and figure that on the fly. I have no clue what that is.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's not potted up in here or something. I don't know. I don't touch buttons as much as possible, although I do have everything set up in here. Welcome in, everybody. We are, of course, the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. Hopefully you're watching either on youtube.com/ESPN1320 or 98.5 HD2 or the free Odyssey app or just good old-fashioned ESPN 1320 on your radio dial. We, of course, are having some technical difficulties with getting audio to the stream right now, but that'll be fixed here soon, and we'll figure it all out. Sacramento Kings, they did it again, Jesse. They did it again!
It was nice in the first half.
Well, I think maybe that's what Kings fans should start to do. They should kind of go, you know what? I just want to see them win one quarter. And then maybe we can see them win one half. Because they did win the first half. But, Jesse, I got to be honest. Like the starting lineups get sent out. We have a... so people who don't know, we have a... a media private channel with the Sacramento Kings PR staff, with their basketball communication staff, to get it correct. And that staff sends out, you know, these like half hour before every game, we get the starting lineups. When the starting lineup got sent out, I was so disappointed.
What did you want to see?
I wanted to see anything other than the same group of dudes who came out and just did not play well at all in the previous game.
No, I get that. I feel like we're going to see that coming up, though, the next game.
I don't know, though. Like, at some point, you have to make some sort of move. And, like, I know Doug Christie has... it's a complicated situation because we're talking about... your issues are specifically... they're, like, your veteran players. I've never seen anything like what I saw last night. The first possession, Russell Westbrook just drops the ball to the opponent. The next possession, Russell Westbrook just drops the ball to the opponent. The next possession down, they just took turns. Then it was DeMar DeRozan, just drops the ball. Like, what are you doing? Keegan Murray just gives up the ball. Like, the first four possessions of the game were flat out there just turnovers.
Yeah.
And you know what the answer was? Hey, Drew Eubanks, off the court. I looked around like, is it just me or is Drew Eubanks the only one who didn't just give the ball away with a live ball turnover to the Houston Rockets in the first 2 minutes of the game?
Yeah, but you're going to give the other guys some leeway, I guess. But I get it, though.
Why?
Because I don't know, James, because they're vets. I don't know at this point because they're vets.
They've gotten 22 games. Like, if I didn't have a really nice TV, I would have thrown something at it very hard. If, you know, like, I was watching, like, what is happening? How could you come out and show so little regard for the game of basketball to play that way in the first 2 minutes of a game? Especially after you should have been out there fighting for your position is what you should have been doing. And so I'm done with the starting lineup. Like, I know other people have gotten their way before me, but I'm done with these guys. If they don't want to play hard, if they don't want to play basic fundamental basketball... And the reason why I know they know how to play basic fundamental basketball is because I've got 18 years of one of these guys. I've got 17 years of one of these guys. 12 years of another guy. I don't know what's going on with Dennis Schroeder, but I've never seen a guy be questionable for over a week and then not be able to play. Okay. Questionable means you have a 50-50 chance of playing. A week ago? Still not playing. Like, okay. I don't know what's going on, but all I can say is that when I'm watching... is an embarrassment, and you have to make changes. You have to do something different, because I'm not going to go the whole insanity, like expecting some... No, you're just going to lose, and that's it. Like, I watched, like, in the second time they put the starters back out, at least they came out with some fire. And it's like, oh, look, they do get it. They do get it that they're about to all be benched as a group. And so I know we hear a lot here about, oh, well, you know, Doug Christie has made this mistake or that mistake. Like, what is the dude supposed to do? Because I can tell you this, Max Reynaud played hard. I can tell you Precious Achiuwa played hard. Neat Clifford played hard. Like, those guys came out and they gave you everything they had for every minute they were on the court.
Well, and it feels like two... There's nothing to get out of this group with the vets. There's not. There's just not. There's nothing that we're going to learn, or there's nothing, I think, where it's like, oh, they figured it out. I think at this point, you're kind of looking at, all right, which players do we want to trade here and kind of move on from? And I think the only way you're kind of going to get anything out of this season is from a Maxime Reynaud, who I think scored, like, what was it, like 24, 26 points yesterday?
25.
25, 25,
you
right
barely
in the
missed it.
Yeah, right in the middle. But guys like him, you want to see things from Nick. Keegan wasn't great yesterday, but you kind of want to see those guys take the forefront just because, like, that's who your future's with.
Yeah,
like, you're not gonna see just anything else with these other guys.
Yeah, and like we talked about it, like, Houston's a bad matchup for the Kings. They're a huge team, and like, look, they have incredible physical defenders that worked hard to take Keegan Murray away, and that's it. They have multiples, though. They have all kinds of them, and you're,
it's
like
a team full of guys 6'6" and taller.
Yeah, well, I mean, their starting lineup is like 6'7" and taller. Like, it's crazy. Their starting lineup is huge. I thought that some of the players came in and played hard. Like, someone brings up Malik Monk played really well. And someone also, I think it was Rustog, he said, hey, James is going back to, like, all the way back to when you first started covering this team. 16 years ago is when I first started covering this team, the 2010-11 season. I'll tell you the one difference. The one difference is that team had no talent. It had Tyreke Evans, who had just won Rookie of the Year, and DeMarcus Cousins in his rookie season, Hassan Whiteside in his rookie season, who wasn't going to play. They went out and they traded for Samuel D'Alembert, and they had, at one point, Carl Landry. Oh, no, Carl Landry was there. But Antoine Wright, Luther Head, Darnell Jackson, like Dante Green, Omri Caspi in his second season. Like, they didn't have enough talent. They had the lowest payroll in the NBA. They had to trade for a player at the trade deadline just to get to the salary floor. You know what? That team was so bad, they have a better record than this team.
This team's just, point. I don't, because this team has talent. We talked about before, and we're past all, this team has talent, but is it just, this team just isn't there's no sort of cohesion where it doesn't work at all. Like, it just doesn't make sense where it's just, like, it's just a group of guys throwing it together, but, like, none of this is going to work.
No, it's not going to work.
Well, it's like, yeah, you look at a team like the Wizards, it's like, oh, yeah, roster-wise, you're not as bad as them, but you look at it record-wise, like, you are them.
Well, not only that, but who's got it worse? Like, I would rather the Kings be in the situation that the Washington Wizards are.
The Kings haven't even really started their progression forward, I guess, and a build, rebuild, whatever you'd like to call it.
Yeah, but even your older veteran players, your Chris Middletons, your CJ McCollums, number one, they'll have value at the trade deadline. Number two, they're on expiring contracts and they're out. And you're going to be fine. You already have a top pick. You already have a couple of other young players that you're starting to build around. They may not be good enough, but at least they're 3 years ahead where the Kings are in their build. Like, that's a bad place. When you're 3 years behind the Wizards their build?
The Kings still got to unload guys to move forward.
Yeah.
Like, Zach LaVine isn't part of this. DeMar DeRozan isn't part of this. I'm not sure if DeMontis Sabonis will be, and just others here. Like, you still got to unload guys to move forward still.
Yeah. It's just a really, really bad place to be in. And, you know, again, I thought they played really well in the first half. They come out in the second half. The opposition made some adjustments. The Rockets made some adjustments, and the Kings had no answer for those adjustments, and the game was over. I mean, I don't know what the grand, it was like 36-3 or something, whatever the end of the third quarter was. Maybe it was like 30-8 or something. They just got blown away. And, you know, for me, the one thing I will say is that
real quick, can you vamp for like a minute? I think I know how to fix it.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna run into your studio though.
Okay, that's all fine. Right. Yeah. The thing that I would point out that, you do have some things to be thankful for. Like, Maxime Reynaud came out and played out of his mind. That was the best performance that we've seen from a rookie in a while. And for me, it's, Jesse's working on it. Sorry, everybody. We're figuring out all of the audio issues as we go along. Maybe that will work. Hopefully you guys get the stream going. But either way, like, at least you have something. You have something in Max Reynaud to kind of pin your hopes to. You know, Neat Clifford, I think he's played well, but like specifically Max, like he just goes out there and he plays hard, and it shows you the pathway forward for this team. Just go out there and do your job. Just go out there and play as hard as you can. Now, is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. Is Reynaud like a year away from being like a what should be a rotational player? Yeah, he's probably a year away. But still, it's something that you can kind of be like, hey, look, you know, a young kid goes out there. The 19 points he scored last week, I mean, I think 13 of them came in the last 90 seconds of the game. It doesn't really matter. But the 25 he put up against a really good defensive Rockets team.
Well, that's the thing, because you're watching the game yesterday, and it's like, oh, he's putting up points against the Rockets backups. Like, no, he's going up against Sengun and holding his own.
Yeah.
And I think, like, leaving that game, was like, oh, they got blown out again. It's your fourth straight loss. But it's like, all right, well, Maxime played well. Like, at least we got something. At least there's something to leave from that game with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And those are the kind of successes I think that's good for Doug Christie, I guess, too. Like, we know he's kind of working with a lost cause here, but if you can get guys like Maxime to step up and develop, what's up?
Now your audio's dead on the stream.
Jeez. All right, well, we got you fixed up. Hold on. We'll get me fixed up. I got it right now. That's good. Keep on.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Jesse. Like, you know, there is some positivity. And hey, look, it's not all like, I don't think Scott Perry's gone out there and just done a horrible job here.
Can the stream hear me now?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, that's not good.
That was a loud...
How about now?
Oh, maybe that worked. Yeah.
Just play on. We'll fix it at the break. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll fix it at the break. I think the other thing that I point out is that the Kings might have stumbled upon something with Precious Achiuwa. Like, first of all, that's a type of player that they've needed for years. Like, he's versatile. He can defend, like, 3, 4, 5. He plays hard. He rebounds. He doesn't mind, like, trying to dunk on people. Like, this is a type of player. And I'm wondering, just can the Kings moneyball this thing? Because, like, at least for this season, can you get rid of some of these other contracts and just go out and find guys who play hard and give them a shot? Because a lot of times, that's how you can start to build the type of culture, because you're bringing in people who are on the outside looking in, and when they get to your building, they're just going to work hard.
Well, it's guys, that want to stay in the league, like Precious wasn't here on an NBA roster to start the season or anything like that. You bring him in, and he's just been nothing but great, I feel like, for the Kings since.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to keep a guy like that around, and you just want guys that are bought in, willing to play hard right now. Like, you're literally starting from scratch.
Yeah, because I think we're all of us are done with the guys who don't want to play hard and the guys that don't want to show up on a nightly basis. And, you know, we'll get to Six Quick Thoughts, where a lot of that will kind of go through some of the guys that either played well or didn't last night. But there are some guys that, like, I don't even know how else to keep saying it. Like, you know, like I put people on a milk carton in Six Quick Thoughts. Like, at this point, it's more than a milk carton. You got, like, search parties out for people. Like, where are you? What happened to you? You were supposed to be this incredible scorer. Where are you?
Yeah, I wonder who you're talking about.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a minute. We also have this weird thing with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Yesterday, he was a talk of the NBA because he clearly has decided he doesn't want to play in Milwaukee anymore, and his agent is pushing the idea of him finding somewhere else to play. And then a couple of minutes into the game, right, he takes a step.
Yeah, I mean, a few minutes into the game, damn near.
Now he's out 2 to 4 weeks with a calf strain. First of all, I'm going to point out that, like, a lot of times your mental and your physical are tied together. And you know, he's probably going into that game with a lot of stress, like, overall. And so it's possible that he, you know, just pulled up lame. It's also possible that between the Bucks and him, they've decided that they're going to bubble wrap him and put him on the shelf until he's traded, because they don't want anything bad to happen.
If that's the case, then don't even play. Like, just sit out. Because, I mean, if you're going to go down, let's say, if that's the case, if you're going to go down mid-game, then that's kind of tough. You're a villain at that point.
Yeah, well, I think either way, I think he's starting to realize he's going to be a villain. And he's tried very, very hard to not be a villain.
Yeah, he's been tightroping this whole thing. I mean, he's done articles in the past where it's like, oh, yeah, if we don't win a title, then maybe the Bucks will have to trade me. Like, I'm not above it. But, like, we know what that means. He's been slow playing this for a couple of years. And now we've reached the point where it's like, now it's time for him to move.
Yeah, no, it is. It's time for him to go. And, you know, you hope that he lands somewhere that he can go and find success again. And it kind of plays into the conversation that we had yesterday about how, you know, it is very difficult to be like the only guy on a team or to be one of the guys on the team that feels that way, because then you end up doing way too much and that's not good either. And, you know, like their basketball is about flow. It's about sharing the ball. It's about five guys working together, right? And being the only star level player on a team is very difficult. Like the opposing defense has everything in their power to stop you. And not only that, but he's getting hit like the entire game.
Yeah.
Like people are just running at him because like, who are you going to defend on that team? That's not him. Are you going to really worry about whether Kyle Kuzma's going off against you? You're not. That's the answer. Or some of the guys that you're like, I didn't even know that guy was in the league and oh, he's starting. That's what their roster looks like at this point. It's tough.
Once we can go back to when they had Middleton, once we knew like he was done and his injuries were too much to overcome, I felt like a lot of it after that was desperation, including like the Damian Lillard move. Like, yeah, it's Damian Lillard, but it's also kind of like a last hurrah for Giannis to try and get a championship, and that didn't work. And now you ended up with these other guys here, and like now it's always like I said, once Middleton and that group was done, it was kind of writing was on the wall, I feel, since then.
Yeah, and once you bought out Damian Lillard, you just kind of like admitted that you tried something, it didn't work.
And now there's reports of whether Giannis didn't like that or he did like that, and just things aren't adding up at this point now.
Yeah,
it's all
just
a big old mess.
They're not. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, hopefully we will fix the audio on the stream. We apologize, whatever's going on. Sometimes this happens. But we're the insiders here on ESPN 1320. When we come back, we're going to discuss six quick thoughts and kind of dive into the minutia of another bad Kings loss. Welcome back in. I'm James Hamm. Jesse Tapia is joining me. Kyle
Madsen.
We're
back on the stream, James. We're back.
We're back.
I definitely wasn't annoyed that whole segment where we weren't.
We figured out the audio issue. Shout out to Jonathan. Kyle Madsen is going to miss today and tomorrow. He is taking a little break with the 49ers on a bye week. He is going to, I think he took off for Disneyland.
I don't know where he is, to be honest. He's somewhere. I stopped asking. Kyle's gone. I'm here. I don't know.
Yeah.
Kyle's having fun somewhere.
That's true. We will have Jerry Reynolds dropping by at 11 o'clock to hang out for the 11 o'clock hour. Nothing better than having Jerry drop by. I'm a little concerned because it is super foggy outside out of nowhere. So I'm looking out the window behind Jesse's head and like you can't see very far. So I know where Jerry's coming from and it's that direction. So I'm hoping that everything works out smooth because he'll swing by. And
it's been ridiculously cold out here in Sacramento, Elk Grove, Roseville area, whatever you want to call it. I got to put on three coats to go walk my dog now. It's insane.
It's 46 degrees right now. That's cold.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's insanely cold out here. I don't know why. Usually maybe it's like a brisk 55 or something like that. Or maybe we're getting like 58. We're just getting out the 60s. But now it's like, oh, it might snow this morning. I don't know.
Yeah, it feels cold. It does have to be 38 degrees for snow to fall. And then I think it like for it to stick, it's got to be colder than that. But 36 degrees is a number. Someone asked earlier, how old is Dario Saric and Doug McDermott? Dario Saric is 31. I was wrong. Doug McDermott is a whopping 33. He's almost 34. He'll be 34 on January 3rd. All right, let's dive into last night's game. Let's check out six quick thoughts.
I don't got the music, but I got the dinger.
Oh, okay. You don't have the music. Okay, so these are things that I post on Twitter, X every game. Also Blue Sky, you can find him there. But when I was going through last night's game, number one, Maxime Reyneau, he just continues to develop. And Doug Christie talked so glowingly about him the other night about how not only is he developing as a player, but also he's one of those kids that you just want to be around. Like he's a phenomenal young man, super smart, super engaged. But last night he had a complete career game. He had 25 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a block. he was so good from the jump. I mean, he had 14 points in the first quarter. He's the one that helped keep the thing from being a blowout early.
I think he had like 11 of the first 24 points in the first quarter, I think.
Yeah, like he came in and played hard, and you could see it. And not only that, but he's got a ton of skill. For me, Jesse, the thing that I saw that I really, really liked was the first thing he did is he drained a couple of threes. You're like, hey, look at that.
Yeah, no hesitation either. First one, he banked in a little bit. Hope he called bank. But other than that, I mean, it was great.
Yeah, he did bank in the first one. It was not good. I think when he was at Stanford, he was a good 3-point shooter, not a great 3-point shooter, but he shot a ton of threes. He was also a primary scorer. So this is a kid who averaged 20 and 10 in college. And like he's one of those guys that you're wondering why he fell to the second round, because he does project as an NBA player. And even, you know, he reminds me a lot of Nikola Vucevic coming out of USC. So Vucevic was like a 4-5 and could shoot the ball and do these things. But you're like, okay, how's it going to work out? And actually, the Kings really liked Vucevic and tried to move back into that draft to get him at 19, but couldn't. And he's gone on to have like a spectacular career. That's what Reyno is starting to look like to me. And some of it's a little sloppy. He's got to clean up a lot of things, but I do like sort of the outline of the player that I see. And, you know, again, we watched Hartenstein came out and killed the Kings for a career high, what, 33 points and 19 rebounds or whatever, right? Hartenstein's, his career high coming into that game was like 24 points.
Yeah, he's not someone who's known for that.
No. At all.
Yeah, not even close.
But watching Reyno in like his 22nd or probably more like his 18th NBA game, because he hasn't played every game, come out and give you 25, I was like, hey, he's showing you something. The
offensive potential with him, I think, has been there. Just more so, all right, he's kind of a skinny 7-footer or whatever, 6'10", whatever you want to call him, and it's just you hope he can hold his own defensively, not be his defensive stopper, but just more so not kill you and otherwise... And on the other side, he's able to play better offensively.
Yeah.
He's got that game, but it's just, yeah, he just needs to be better all around.
I think offensively, he's been very good, but defensively...
Like, he's shown the flashes.
Yeah, he's shown flashes, but defensively, he's actually, like, the numbers say he's pretty solid. Like, is he swinging and trying to block every shot? Yeah, he'll get through that. He'll figure that one out, that doesn't work at the NBA level. But he's getting better as a rebounder. He's not a great rebounder. It's going to take a while for him to get strong enough to be an NBA rebounder, especially when you go into the game against a guy like Steven Adams. You're just going to get checked right out of the key. I mean, there's nothing.
Everyone is against Steven Adams. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's the strongest dude in the NBA.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't even think it's remotely close. I mean, the dude is just a monster. But I think Reyno held his own, and he held his own against Şengün. He held his own against Jabari Smith. The one guy he did not hold his own against was Amen Thompson, which, you know, the Kings kept trying to go at Amen Thompson in the post, and like they had nothing. I mean, that dude is so good defensively. And so there is a way for Amen Thompson to like take a Keegan Murray out of a game. He's just that good defensively. And to be honest, I don't think there's a way for him to, for a guy like Keegan Murray to stop Amen Thompson because of the athleticism. But they're, and especially when you're getting out on breaks and stuff, that's where he scored a bunch of his points. All right, let's get to number two. Great addition. Precious Chua was out of the league until Scott Perry gave him a call on November 4th. He just gives you maximum effort, right? And I don't think Precious Chua is a perfect player. And if you have to play Precious Chua 30 something minutes every night, you're not a good team. But the guy comes in and he works. And, you know, not only that, but as soon as he comes in the game, and they go to the second unit, the score starts to even out, and you become a better basketball team. And it's because this is a dirty work guy. He knows his role. He goes in and he does his role. He rebounds. He gets physical with people. He tries to block shots. He doesn't do a bunch of crazy offensive things that you're like, oh, boy. If he does shoot the three, it's because he's supposed to shoot the three. He's alone in the corner, and he shoots it. I'm just super, super impressed with Precious Achiuwa.
I mean, everything you just said, he's just the guy who just does his job. You're not really going to expect, or he's not going to do like, oh, why did he take that extra shot? Or what is he doing here? It's just whatever Doug Christie or this team needs him to do, he's kind of been for them. And like you said, yeah, you're not expecting to play 30, 35 minutes for you or anything like that. But I kind of have left these performances thinking, all right, maybe you do have a big up, backup big and Precious Achiuwa that can just kind of be with you the next few seasons and kind of be a part of what you're building now.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate to see Precious Achiuwa stick around. Behind the scenes, he's a very, very nice dude. He just, like, super chill.
He's an NBA player. He just hasn't stuck around anywhere yet.
Yeah, and it's weird that he hasn't stuck around.
I'm not sure if that's just because it's his draft. I think he was, like, the 15th pick or around that area or whatever in the first round. I'm not sure if it's kind of like, oh, yeah, he's not what he was selected or thought of to be. But, like, he's a decent NBA player.
Yeah, it's always funny how a player who gets drafted, I don't think he was that high. Let me see. Precious was a 20th pick by the Miami Heat. I don't think that it, you know, sometimes it is an issue that you're drafted as a first-round pick and there are expectations, and if you don't live up to those expectations quickly, then they're going to move on from you. I also think, like, when he goes to Miami, he's kind of like a poor man's Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, he was stuck behind Bam immediately.
Yeah, and then if you, when he went to Toronto, and, you know, you can kind of say the same thing. Like, they had a whole bunch of 6'10", long, athletic dudes who could play the four or the five, and so he gets lost in the shuffle. Sometimes it's about just finding your place in the NBA, and I don't know that he's completely found his place in the NBA in Sacramento, but I certainly think that he's been a nice addition, and shines a light on a way that the Kings can go out and search for players like him that might have more game that they're allowed to show in their previous stops. And while you're going through this weird rebuild process, maybe you can find a small forward version of him. Maybe you can find, you know, again, if you do have to lose a Keon Ellis, maybe you can find a shooting guard version of this type of player. And so hopefully, again, it's giving the Kings something that they can kind of look for.
Yeah, I haven't had any issues with him. And, like, it's kind of the player that Kings fans ask for. It's like you're not going to bring up a bunch of superstars or whatever, but bring in maybe a free agent or a player who's just kind of on the waivers or whatever, has just got some potential and kind of develop it here.
Yeah, and does his job. I mean, I think that's the key.
That's the thing. You need guys that are bought in right now. And we'll talk about that in a little bit or whatever, but yeah. Like, Precious is a guy that's bought in.
No, I totally agree. All right, let's get to number three. He put up points. Malik Monk, like, look, there are a lot of things that you can say about Malik Monk, but I would say over the last couple of weeks, while things have gone south, he's going out there and he's leading a group of young players and they're playing extremely well. And I think last night he was very good. He took 19 shots, which was a little jarring. But, like, who else was taking shots? Nobody.
That's the thing. Malik is, if you're not going to do it, Malik's going to do it. Malik is just kind of,
yep.
Like, he's just always going to be there doing whatever they need.
Yeah, so last night he had 25 points. I thought he changed the whole tempo of the game when he came in, both in the first half, and, you know, he tried to keep them alive in the third quarter until the wheels completely fell off the bus. But the other thing he did last night was he had 5 assists. I need Malik Monk to get back to that dude, the guy who averages 15 and 5 or 17 and 5, not the guy who's averaging 15 and 2. Because you're just wasting a very, very, you know, skilled basketball player that has the ability, especially in the pick and roll, to make other players better. And that's something that I miss from his game this season. I feel like they've asked him to do too much as just a primary scorer off the bench and not enough creating. And again, it's about making the team better, not just making Malik Monk better. And so, like, hopefully we figure that one out. But hey, good job last night.
I have no issue. Malik Monk, for me, there's always a spot for Malik Monk on any team, I feel.
Yeah.
He's one of the guys, few guys here. I don't want to say few guys because it puts the others in a bad spot. But, you know, Malik Monk is bought in on Sacramento. You know, whether they're 5 and whatever it is now or whether they're first round of the playoffs, like, he's just always ready to go. He's a lunch pail type of guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that and I know, you know, he's a name that gets brought up a lot in trade talks,
which I don't love. I mean, but I'm not there, so I don't know. But
yeah, this summer that was brought up a lot. I think right now, like, again, this team needs to pull together, not splinter. And you're hoping that, you know, again, guys like Malik, they run hot. You know, when they're on the court, they're heated. He's a guy who, that energy that he brings, that's who he is everywhere. Like, and so that doesn't always play when you're losing. And so I'm hoping that...
might be part of the reason why CP3 was sent home. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, people who hold other people accountable, I'm okay with that. But they're also, you know, is there a way in which you can do it without being a problem?
Well, it's time and place and, I guess, approach and all that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get to number four. That was a straight-up roller coaster ride. Watching Russell Westbrook play, like... there's a couple of threes he took that it was like, oh my gosh, please don't take another three. And then you look up and he's 2 for 4 and you're like, okay, wait, what just happened? You know, there's all of the assists. He started cooking with a bunch of assists. He got 9 assists, right? But then there's 4 turnovers, and his turnovers were, I think the thing about Russ is he, the way he moves, the physicality, the force he plays with, it's so visual. You see it like at all
times. It's impactful. Like, yeah, like you said, you see it all the time. It's just you notice Russ every time he's on the court.
You're drawn to him. Your eye is drawn to him at all times. So when he makes a turnover that, you know, like literally looks like he just dropped the ball and handed it to the other team, like you see it. It's so visible. It's not like the pick and roll turnover where the ball gets swatted and it's all in a bunch of dudes and you don't know where who knocked the ball out and who didn't. That's one turnover. You're like, okay, that's... You're kind of like, okay, well, they turned the ball over. But with Russ, it's almost like it's a lot like Buddy Hield turnovers. You just like look at him like, what just happened? And so like when he gets done with the game and he's got 12 points, he's got 9 assists, he's got 4 rebounds, he's got 4 turnovers. I had someone say, why did you post that he turned the ball over the first 2 possessions of the game? It's like, because he turned the ball over egregiously in the first 2 possessions of the game. Like it was something that happened. It's not something that like... I'm going to shy away from. If you're going to talk about the good about Russell Westbrook, you have to talk about the bad sometimes. Sometimes the good outweighs the bad so much that you're just like, okay, I don't have to talk about the bad. But when you play, you know, 28 minutes and you turn the ball over 4 times, it stands out.
It's the Russell Westbrook experience.
It is.
I mean, I feel like for the most part, it's been a good experience. I mean, watching Russ play and him being on this team, it's had more good impact than it has bad. But you are going to have moments like that where, yeah, he has 2 egregious turnovers to start the game, or he does finish with 4. And it's just kind of like, you just, at this point in his career, you just, like I said, you take the good with the bad and move on to the next.
Well, that and
this is just who Russell Westbrook is. Like, we all know what you're getting at this point.
It is. And I think the reason why some of his, like, even the 3-point shots, you look and he's not shooting the ball that poorly from 3. But he doesn't shoot in rhythm. And it's almost like he's sitting there at practice, like standing there, holding onto the ball, makes a little pump fake. The guy backs off 3 feet and says, all right, go ahead. And like more often than not, when he takes those out of rhythm threes, they do not go in. So I kind of need to see him in rhythm. And like, again, he's gotten away from the corner 3, which is where he was extremely effective. But that's because he's being asked to be the primary ball handler. It's okay for him to take to stand in the corner when he's a small forward on this team and he's starting, you know, the like 5 or 6 games where he was starting alongside DeMar DeRozan on the front line. That's when he's standing in the corner. But when he's shooting from the top of the key, he's not nearly as effective, and he's also not shooting in rhythm. All right, let's bust these through these last two here. Number 5. That wasn't great. Watching Keegan Murray play last night, he clearly got frustrated by the guys defending him. He was not effective at all. He had 5 points on 2 of 11 shooting. He had 11 rebounds. He turned the ball over 3 times, which I thought was weird, but it was the physicality, and also you could see the thumb was an issue last night with the physicality that the Rockets played at, and the fact that the officials didn't call a single foul. I mean, the Kings went to the free throw line, what, 1 time in the first half and had like the Rockets had 1 foul in the first half. Like, they were getting away with some stuff, but I'm not going to put any of the blame on that, on the officials for that game.
Yeah, no, Keegan's just got to get better. I mean, no matter if it's Thompson or whoever guarding him, I feel like we know who Keegan is.
Yeah.
Like, he went for 26 the other day, and I don't think that's him. He's the 15 to, I mean, you hope he can get to 18 point per game player.
Yeah.
So it's like, yesterday happens, but it's like that's just Keegan Murray sometimes.
Yeah, I guess it is just Keegan Murray sometimes. And you're hoping that he grows through that and he becomes a more consistent scorer. But last night's game, just like, you can't have a 2 for 11 night and you can't score 5 points. And I know he tried, like, you even saw him try to do things that were outside of his standard, you know, play. But again, it wasn't working. And then let's get to number six. Send out a search party. Whatever's going on with Zach LaVine, like, he scored 53 points combined over the previous two games, and he looked like he was a little bit back on track. He scored the, he had the 30-something point game, 34 or whatever it was, and then he had 19. He came out last night, and, like, there was just a void there.
Played 19 minutes, I think, 5 shots.
Yeah, 1 of 5 from the field, scored 2 points. Like, just straight up, that won't cut it. And, like, I don't know what else to say.
James, there is nothing else to say besides, like, you gotta find another team for him. I don't know how you do it, but it's just, it's clear that this isn't working. Hasn't been a fit from the start. Like, it's just, none of this has been cohesive with Zach LaVine being on this team, and it's not even his fault because he's not the one who traded for himself. But it's just, now we've reached a point where, yeah, like, it's clear, it's just, it's not working here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's best for both parties just to move on.
No, I totally agree. And we're going to get to that next. There's an article in ESPN where they talk about some of the primetime point guards that might have negative value in the league. And for some reason, Zach LaVine fits perfectly into that discussion. We're the insiders here on ESPN 1320. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Jesse Tapia is joining me today. Kyle Madsen is away. He's taking a little break during the 49ers.
It's gearing up for the December playoff run for the 49ers.
There it is. There it is. Gearing up.
Run to the playoffs, I guess, if you want to be proper.
That's right. We've been talking Sacramento Kings all day. There is some other things going on in sports, but we're probably not going to get to a lot of that today, especially with Jerry Reynolds dropping by at 11 o'clock here. There's this article, Jesse, Tim McMahon and Bobby Marks. They went into a deep dive. They talked to some like front office personnel around the league about the trio of point guards that we continue to hear that may or may not be available. Trae Young, number one. Trae Young was available this summer. The Sacramento Kings, like from what I know, were approached by the Atlanta Hawks, and they said no, thank you. And it wasn't so much that they hate Trae Young, is that Trae Young makes a ton of money. And then he has an opt-out in his contract for next season, and that opt-out allows him, like, he wants a max money deal, and the Kings were not on board with...
Trae Young wants a bag, and the Kings didn't want to give it to him.
Exactly. And to be honest, I'm not sure that I fault them for that one, because the bag he was going to want was, like, you know, at some point it would be 60-plus. It's basically whatever De'Aaron Fox got. And you really have to love a player in order to do that. And you also have to have a team built that can support a player like Trae Young, because he does not play defense. And if you put him in a backcourt with a guy like Zach LaVine, you're going to have a lot of problems. So there's this conversation about Trae, who's available. Ja Morant, who is currently injured again, but on the heels of being suspended by the Memphis Grizzlies, and there's a ton of chatter around the league that he will be available between now and the February 5th, I think, trade deadline this year. And then lastly is LaMelo Ball. And LaMelo is again, someone that if you go back and watch, if you watch some of the podcasting that Scott Perry did before he became the general manager of the Sacramento Kings, Scott has been high on LaMelo for a long time. He's in Charlotte. He's got, I think he's in the year two of a 5-year contract extension, and he makes a lot of money moving forward. So there has been chatter multiple times here that Charlotte is looking to move off of his contract.
Yeah, he's in year two right now, making about $38 million, 40 next year, 43 there year after that, and then he's last year is $46 million.
46, and that's
in the 28-29 season.
Yeah, so it's a lot, right? And so they're talking about this idea of negative value, and an Eastern Conference executive told Bobby Marks and McMahon from ESPN that they may all have negative value. And I think the reason why I bring up this discussion is because I feel the same way about Zach LaVine. Like, Zach LaVine has negative value around the league. Like, I'm not, like, out of turn, like, talking that way. Like, he has a negative value. He had negative value when he was with the Bulls. And the fact that the Kings took on his contract, again, you can love Zach LaVine as a player. You can hate Zach LaVine as a player. As a contract, you cannot like that contract.
Does his option make it any better or worse, I guess, for next season?
No, because I don't believe any sane person would opt out of a $49 million deal. And I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. But, I mean, is it possible? Sure. But he's not opting out unless he's got another team that's saying, hey, we'll give you a 3-year, $100 million deal, and you're going to take less money per year, but the longevity of it, like, I could see that being something that happens, but I don't think that Zach LaVine is going to walk away from, like, a massive amount of money. It would be, like, beyond negligible for him to do that, for his agent to say, yeah, let's do this, because he could never get another, you know, $15 million a year contract. You don't know, like, the NBA, the budgets have changed, the aprons have changed, everything. Anyway, so there's this idea that these are negative value contracts. And again, there are a lot of negative value contracts in the NBA. There's a ton of them, and some of them are huge negative value contracts, but, like, even the Denver Nuggets, they keep paying the luxury tax because they paid Zeke Nnaji $8 million a year, and they don't even put him on the court at all. I mean, he's a negative value contract. But there's something different when you have a $47 million negative value contract. And I'm wondering if, you know, again, they got another executive from a Western Conference general manager said, when there are these sort of unwanted superstars, sometimes they end up getting traded for each other. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in this case. Again, I'm going to throw Zach LaVine into that group of those other three. I think that, like, there is a possibility, if the Kings want to, they could probably trade Zach LaVine, and whether it's going to be a little bit of draft capital or no draft capital, it would depend on the player. But I wouldn't be shocked to see Zach LaVine be shopped as part of a one-for-one, or, you know, like a closer deal for one of these point guards.
I think for a LaMelo Ball, you probably attach a first-round pick to that. With Zach LaVine, excuse me. You attach a first-round pick to Zach LaVine for a LaMelo Ball type of deal. Ja, I have no interest in that. And I have no interest in attaching this year's pick, too, by the way.
No interest in that,
by the way. Just putting that out there, making sure that's known. And Trae Young, I can kind of be talked into, but yeah, Trae and Ja are the ones I'm just least interested in, I guess.
Yeah, if I'm the Kings, first of all, I'm very leery on attaching a first round pick to anything.
I think if you were to, like, oh, I want to trade for one of these guys, I think for LaMelo, you would have to do it.
Yeah, it's possible, but I also look at, you know, Zach LaVine with one more year left on his deal versus LaMelo, who has 4 years, well, 3 years after this year, and at 40, 44, and 46.5, whatever it is. Like, that's a lot of money.
Is it the craziest amount of money, though, just given where the league is going? We're talking about Trae Young's going to be looking for a deal where he could be getting, like, upwards of, like, 60 and stuff like that. Like, for LaMelo Ball, the next three seasons, around 40. Couldn't that be a kind of a bargain given where the league's going?
Well, yeah, but Trae Young can want what he wants. Like, he's worth what people will pay him. He's not worth what he thinks he's worth.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, you know? Like,
well, I think a guy like Trae Young at least gets 50 to 55, I think.
Well, you'd think so, but if he's not getting it...
60 seems crazy, but...
If he's not getting it from the team he's playing for, well, who's he going to get that from? I think
there's always someone out there, James.
I think there's a better chance of Trae Young...
I mean, who was going to trade for Zach LaVine?
No, that's true. Yeah, but I think there's a better chance that Trae Young opts into the deal for next year, because I think there is a concern that, you know, he makes $48 million next year or whatever, that he might not get that money on the open market somewhere else. And, like, look, I also don't think that teams are knocking on the Hawks door and saying, hey, you know, like, we want him. I don't. And it's crazy because the team's playing extremely well without him.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. And so you're wondering what kind of impact he'll have when he does come back, and whether, you know, again, he can help his trade value or not. But
yeah, I'm not out on a Trae Young or anything like that. I think he's just got a particular skill set where you need to build a particular team around him in order to be successful. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals once, haven't sniffed that since, but I do think he's kind of a De'Aaron Fox type, where if you got the right guys around him, like, yeah, you can be successful. I don't know if you're winning a ring with him or anything like that, but, like, you can be a playoff team year in and year out, I think.
Yeah.
John Morant, I used to really like John Morant. Now at this point, I'm kind of like, no thanks. I just don't think the Kings have the cultural organizational structure to take that kind of player in right now. I'm not sure that he has the kind of bounce that he did before or after injuries, and he just hasn't been really healthy. If you can get him on a cheap type of deal where it's like, I guess maybe it is a Zach LaVine for Jaw straight up or just something like that, sure, I'll listen, but I'm not too interested at this point. And then LaMelo Ball most intrigues me. Just he's coming from the worst team, and there's still potential there. It's like, hey, maybe if we get him over here.
Yeah, I'm just concerned that...
But they all got their warts. Shout out Kenny.
Yeah, I do think that, like, with LaMelo specifically, he's the same player he was when he was a high school kid, and he's, you know, cherry-picking and averaging 50 a game. And then he, you know, again, he's the kid that goes over and plays in, like, Lithuania professionally is and skips the whole college process.
I play pro ball, I mean.
Yeah, like... But the style of play is still the same. The inefficiency is still the same. The turnovers are still the same. Like, I don't see that he's grown as a player. And there are seasons where you're like, oh my gosh, look at his stats. But look at his stats on a 25-win team. And so you're always left with this, like, okay, is he just like a tall version of Jason Williams? And, you know, does that translate to you being a good basketball team?
Well, like, there's that, but also, I mean, it's like we talk about, like, you and Kyle were talking about, like, KD and DeMontis Sabonis. Like, does LaMelo Ball just not have the right guys around him either, though?
No, that's
like,
true.
Like, he's got talent. It's just, like, has anyone ever looked at the Hornets and, like, yeah, they got it this year? Like, ooh, they're going to do something this season. It's just more so they got young guy here, young guy there, and it's like they all got potential, but, like, has LaMelo Ball ever had something where it's like, yeah, it's his time now?
No, that's a good question. Like, again, if you were able to make that trade and you retained a Keegan Murray, you retained a DeMontis Sabonis, you know, some of these other players, like, that might be the most talented group that he's played with. Like, again, Miles Bridges is who he is as a player, but again, it's kind of raw and it's kind of like putting up numbers on a bad team type player. And, like, I think LaMelo does have more to his game, but I think I would make the gamble, but... You know, a guy like Ja is under contract for this year and two more years. I don't think I'm making that gamble anymore.
Ja is third on that list. That he's...
I agree.
Very much, like, not even close to second, I don't think.
Yeah. And I think if you're looking to, you know, again, move for Trae Young, it would be, you know, kind of like, hey, let's see if it looks different here. You know, let's see if we can get a similar type of scorer to Zach LaVine, but an assist guy, and maybe the ball moves better, and maybe we can build around him, maybe we can't.
Yeah, because I think Trae Young's a star. He's an established NBA player. Like, he's a star, no doubt, one of the best players in this league at his position. But it's just, like you're saying, just now see if it works here and if we can get the right guys around him here and see if we can just figure out that equation.
Yeah, it's a really weird situation for him specifically. And I'm hoping that they figure it out. But I do think that the Kings are going to sit here and do their due diligence on every single one of these guys. And I think that they're like, I know that they are shopping right now. They're looking for deals. They're looking to move off of players. And maybe, like, again,
do we know what they're, like, looking for?
You know, to be honest with you, a lot of it is they're looking for undervalued assets. That's kind of been what the mantra is from Scott Perry so far. You know, that's why he was in on the Jonathan Kuminga sweepstakes, because he's looking for an asset that may be way better than he's allowed to be where he's at. And maybe you're right. Maybe Ja Morant is that guy. LaMelo is that guy that he's just, like, if you put better players around him or more seasoned veteran players who have a better track record of success, maybe you can find something there. But I also worry about a player who, like, when you get a player from a team that winning doesn't matter, a lot of times it's tough for them to realize, like, what it takes to win and that winning does matter. And again, I don't know that the Kings are that organization right now, but 2 years ago they were that organization. And they've also been an organization that typically doesn't just go in full tank mode like a lot of the other teams do and like Charlotte does. And so kind of a tough situation.
Yeah, it's real delicate, I guess, the direction that they can go in.
Yeah. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, Jerry Reynolds is going to join us, and we're going to hang out and talk more Kings basketball. I'm James Hamm. He's Jesse Tapia. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.